Hey, we want to let you know that Nina and I are the featured guest speakers at Megan Dom's Unspeakeasy Retreat in Louisville, Kentucky on April 9th and 10th. The Unspeakeasy is a community for heterodox-minded women that offers a private membership community online, as well as in-person sanity spa retreats all over the country. Retreats consist of 2 days of conversation facilitated by Megan. She's an author and the host of the Unspeakable podcast, and the co-host of A Special Place in Hell. Discussion topics are curated according to participants' interest and range from censorship in the arts and media to public health policy to education to our favorite topic, gender. Retreats are small, usually no more than 12 participants, and totally off the record. You have to apply to the retreat, which essentially means explaining why you're interested. There is no test. And heterodorks listeners are eligible for a discount once they sign up. Again, this is in Louisville, Kentucky, April 9th and 10th. For more information, go to theunspeakeasy.com.
Heterodorks! Heterodox dorks!
Hello, TERFs and trannies! You are listening to the Heterodorks podcast. My name is Corinna Cohn, and I am a disenchanted transsexual who is introducing the show this week because my co-host Nina Paley has been doing it over and over recently. Ha ha, Nina.
Ha ha. And I'm Nina Paley, your other co-host. I'm a canceled artist. And we have a very special guest today, a documentarian whose work many of our listeners may be familiar with. Her name is Jennifer Lahl.
Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. Nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. For those who don't know, Jennifer just released her latest documentary, which is called The Lost Boys. Should we start by talking about that?
Your show.
You know, I found that whenever I lose my keys, they're always in the last place that I looked. So is it the same with these boys?
I don't know. That's a good way of putting it. The last place that they looked, I think it was more of an epiphany for them versus, you know, searching and, oh, keys are there on the kitchen counter where I last left them.
There's my penis. Sorry. Too soon.
more like a couple decades too late, Corinna.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I worked in clinical nursing for 20 years. I've got the gallows humor down.
So you have, if I remember, 5 or 6 male detransitioners?
5. Yeah. 3 in the U.S. and 2 in Europe. So, yeah. And they all have different stories, but the same stories, but different, you know, it's, you know, there's themes. So in the movie, we sort of explore different themes. What were you like as a little boy? You know, some of them like doing traditional little boy things. Other of them, you know, like Richie wanted to be a ballerina. You know, what were you like when puberty hit? You know, what was your home life? What were the sort of the social cues in the home that you grew up in as far as what boys did and what boys don't do and those kind of things? The role of pornography. And then sort of a realization that most of these young men were just fast-tracked. Oh, you must be trans. This is what you need to do. And so, of course, to sort of make things right in their mind and help them feel better about who they are, they follow the advice of the professionals.
I notice that all of the detransition subjects, they appear to me to be millennials.
Yeah, I don't know that was intentional. I mean, when we, you know, we've done 3 documentary films now in the space of trans. And when I look at a film project, I sort of start with, who do I want to be on camera? What's the story we're going to tell? Who are articulate? You know, you want people that are, you know, good on camera and can articulate their story. I don't ever, as a matter of my own personal ethical practice, I don't ever interview children. Mm. Because a lot of times people say, well, why don't you interview 6 and 8-year-olds? I'm like, it's not me. I'm not going to put these little people on camera and have their story live on forever and ever, that they have to thing, you know, we know, I'm old enough to know that all the stuff I did in my heyday isn't on the internet.
I wouldn't want to interview children because I hate working with children, but you have a better reason.
I was a pediatric nurse for many years, so I actually like children. I don't want to protect the children. Give me all the children and the puppies too.
I'd interview a puppy. Not a
Yeah,
child, though.
but they're not good. They're not very articulate.
Our children?
No, but they can say some pretty cute and funny things. But yeah, no, I don't. So I don't interview anybody who's technically legally a minor. And so they have to be of a certain age for me to entertain having them on camera. So,
And how did you connect with these five subject male
yeah,
detransitioners?
well, you know, you guys know it too because you're up there on the Twitter sphere, and you know, so I follow a lot of these accounts of detransition people. Film I made a year ago was the Detransition Diaries, which is focused only on women. So I just follow these people. I talked to Benjamin Boyce because he has a lot of people that are on his channel. Who do you think has great stories, compelling? What one is who do you think will be in a film? Because a lot of people will just say no, they don't want to put themselves out there in a documentary film. And then once we sort of identify those people, then I just approach them and I say, here's what I'm doing, and I'm setting out to make a documentary film, and would you be interested in participating in? And then I answer any questions they want. Pretty much an open book. We make everybody sign releases so they know in advance that they can't. Once we film them, they've agreed to be in the film, because sometimes people want to back out. And that's okay. People can want to back out, but when you're in production, we're a small, modest little filmmaking group, so we don't have like copious amounts of budget. Yeah, we'll just flush that interview and we'll go find somebody else.
It sounds like there's a story there.
No, I mean, it's always people, because you know, everybody hates to see themselves on camera. They hate their
Oh, yeah.
voice. They hate the way they look. I interviewed Michelle Forcier,
Oh, it's Chicken Lady.
the chicken lady, for
Yeah,
my film Transmission.
she's famous because she was in the What Is a Woman documentary that Matt Walsh
Well, she
made.
should be famous because she was in my film. She was in my film first,
Yeah, but did she
but I'm
talk
not
about
one. No.
crying chickens in your film?
No, she said other things. Like, your child is on a journey and you're supposed to be in the back seat, parents, and let the child drive the car because the child knows where they want to go. And you're supposed to be
Oh.
in the back seat and just and you know, encourage them and support them as they drive the car on their journey. I'm like, what the hell?
She actually
No,
said
but
that
anyway, she was.
children should be driving the car.
Yeah, I mean that's in my film. But
Oh, that's
again,
pretty
I'm not
good.
Matt Walsh, so a million people didn't see my film.
I mean, the children driving the cars would explain a lot of what I see on the roads now.
But she got a little bit uncomfortable after the interview and wanted to control
Yeah.
what I used of the interview in her. So those kinds of things happen. So, which is why it's important to get releases.
Which film of yours was she in?
She was in Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender?
Ah,
What
okay.
year? What year did you release that?
Oh gosh, Nina. 3 years ago? Last year was Detransition Diaries 223, 2023. So it was like 2021, 2022. The years all blurred together.
And
Wow.
when
I
you
mean, I've made
release,
three films in like 3 years.
yeah, when you release a film, like when, so that was your first film, as you say, in this space.
Yeah.
And when you were making that first film, what were you thinking about, like, distribution, how people would see it, where it would go, where did you think this film was heading?
Well, that was my eighth film, so we were already thinking distribution. You know, we are always a pretty much a straight film and straight to online streaming. When we made Transmission, we had a very generous funder who funded the whole entire film budget, said, just go make the film, put it immediately on YouTube for free. So we knew pre-production that that was going to be the release of the film. And we also always, as a backup, like all of our films are on Rumble. They're on Vimeo, because you never know who's going to shut you down, who's going to get stinky or something like that. with Detransition Diaries, we didn't have a generous funder who funded the whole thing, so we crowdfunded that film. So we did a test, and we had it, I think, 3 months on Vimeo for pay-per-view. And we found out what we knew we would find out: people like free content. So after about 3 months, we just threw it up on YouTube and said it's free now. So with this film, we knew immediately we're not even going to try to monetize it. Even though, again, this is a film we had to pretty much crowdfund. We had to raise the money as we went. And we won't make any money back on it, which is absolutely fine. But it's been up for 3 days, and we've had over 100,000 views. I mean, over 10,000 views. But the trailer has had over 100,000 views. I think the trailer's at like 120,000 views. The trailer's been up for about 6 days. The film's been up a little over 3 days. And we hired a social media company to do post campaign. So like today, we're just teasing out short little 30-second, 90-second clips of the film with, you watch the whole film, go over here. Want to watch the whole film, go over here. And we're going to be testing and doing all that market stuff. You know, we're targeting certain demographics. You know, we're not targeting 80-year-old white men in America, because, you know, we're targeting people that would be of an age of being a parent. We're targeting, like, when I say targeting, that sounds like we're trying to target people.
Yeah.
We're trying to serve our ads up in front of people that are a particular demographic.
Well, I don't mean to criticize your strategy, but I think it would be a good idea to target 80-year-old white men, because one of them might be our next president.
Touché. Could be. All right.
So are you monetized on YouTube right now?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, that's a joke.
Oh yeah.
Yes, we are. Yeah, well, I think we've made $9.73.
Ah, nice. Congratulations. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's more than I've ever made on YouTube, but I just will not monetize.
After the show, I'm buying dinner. I'm buying dinner for us all after the show.
A $9 dinner.
It's going to be rice and beans.
We have to share.
I can't eat the beans. I'll just have a few grains of rice.
Okay. But yeah, that's our strategy for releasing our films. So, I mean, in the earlier days when we were making documentary films, we did have DVDs. But when I drive up to our physical office, because we actually have a physical office that I sometimes go to, we have just boxes of unsold DVDs because nobody buys DVDs. I had somebody email me the other day and go, oh, can you mail me a DVD of this film? I'm like, I don't have any DVDs. But you can watch it on the YouTube.
Did you know that I'm a filmmaker?
I didn't know that. I knew you were an artist that was canceled.
Yeah, well, that's how canceled I am. I'm a filmmaker. And yes,
I thought artist, like, painter.
Yeah, no, I made animated feature films. I made one very critically acclaimed animated feature film, but when you get totally canceled, then you get kind of erased. But
wow. would I know the title?
I don't know. It was called Sita Sings the Blues. I released it in 2008, and I was one of the first filmmakers, and certainly the first, I think, well-regarded animation filmmaker to release my stuff freely. But at the time, you still had to press DVDs. So it's like, yeah, DVDs, you pay the filmmaker or whatever, whoever is releasing the film pays for printing all those DVDs first. Whereas if people can download it, they've already paid for their computer and it doesn't cost you anything to release a film for free. So all these filmmakers were just losing money, and film distributors, I mean, it became clear to me that, like, most films lose money, and then there's a couple that make money and everybody else loses money, and then their films are forgotten, and why bother? And free distribution, or it was such an opportunity that your audience would share the films with each other. So your audience would advertise the film, and also your audience would basically pay for all the infrastructure necessary to distribute your film, which just wasn't possible before.
Those days are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to tell you both, actually. At 12:08 a.m. this morning, my 25-year-old nephew asked if we could talk.
Oh.
And he said,
were you asleep?
I was just about to fall asleep. I watch YouTube videos to fall asleep, and yeah, he sent that, and then I like the day before he had asked if we could talk sometime, and I asked if we could talk tonight, but he's very, very excited because he spoke with the admission office at a very expensive university that specializes in helping young people break into entertainment and digital creation, where they want to put them on the hook for $70,000 to get a degree in digital cinematography. And I just want to ask, where did you two go to school to become filmmakers?
I tell people I watch movies.
You watch movies.
That's where I live. Yeah.
Wait.
So no, here's my story. When I was
Yeah.
in nursing school, when I was in college in nursing school, my boyfriend was in film school at UCLA, and he was working on all the Highlander movies. Do you know the Highlander movies? There can
Yeah.
just be one, the sword.
I know what you're talking about, but there was only one Highlander movie.
Well, there was a couple that came after
But
that.
he was working on those while he was in school. So he was attending
Yeah.
film school while working on
Well,
Hollywood
he
movies.
wrote them. He wrote those
Oh,
scripts.
wow.
Yeah,
Oh.
I have the original Highlander script autographed by
Wait.
him in my home somewhere.
Wait.
So
Wait, so
that's where I went to film school.
your college boyfriend wrote the Highlander movie.
And if he ever hears this, he hates my guts.
Well, hang on. He also wrote Highlander 2.
I think he wrote a couple of them. He wrote The Prophecy with Christopher Walken. He wrote Backdraft with Kurt Russell. He was doing
Yeah.
Backdraft when we were done because he was all over Chicago running around with the Chicago fire police,
And
firemen, fire
I know we're not
department.
talking about your boyfriend, but you probably know this, but Highlander 2 is regarded as one of the worst movies of all time.
I think I remember seeing it like 30 years ago when
Yeah.
it came out.
Well,
You know, I haven't seen it since then.
he was an asshole, huh?
No, he wasn't.
Oh,
I just
really?
it just wasn't my he just wasn't my
Okay.
jam. So you know,
All
you
right.
break up with somebody and you get back together and then you break up again with them and they're like,
Yeah.
no.
All
I'm
right.
dead to him, but that's okay.
Wow, he
But
really hates you
I'm
now.
joking. I'm joking and saying that's how I learned to make movies.
Wait,
Wait,
well,
by
I never
dating
went to
someone
film
who went
school.
to film school?
I just you hear those guys like Steve Jobs, they drop out of school and they
Oh,
just
yeah.
figure out, you know, you don't have to go to film school to learn how to make movies.
I want to talk to actual filmmakers here. And I know we've got a lot to talk about, but what advice would you, each of you, what would you
Wait, you
tell my
haven't asked
nephew?
me about my film education and what film school I went to.
That's because you're the co-host and you can answer after our guest, Nina.
Okay, well, she
Wait
answered.
your turn.
Okay.
Put it in the show notes, Nina.
Yeah, come on, Nina.
Your CV.
Nina, where did you go to school to learn to become a filmmaker?
I dropped out of art school, not studying film, as after my sophomore year, and I never returned. And I'm completely self-taught.
Well, how can you
Yeah.
two be filmmakers if you don't have credentials?
We have credentials now. We've made films.
Yeah.
All right. So, what would you tell young people who.
I made award-winning films. I
Yeah,
got awards.
me
You
too.
both have awards.
Yes.
Nina has a whole cabinet full of awards. So.
I would tell people it's about building a team because a filmmaker is dependent on good directors of photography. It's critical to have a really great editor. It's critical to have good subject matter. It's like, how do you throw a dinner party? You have really good food, you invite interesting people, you put out your nice dishes, whatever.
No, no, no.
Whatever. I mean,
No. First you need to have a degree in culinary art.
you can't just watch cooking shows.
No. Then you need an interior design certificate.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I
So,
don't think that's true. We disagree there.
all
But
right.
you're I
Well,
don't know you well enough. That's just your sense of humor, maybe.
yeah, I'll tell you now, he does have a sense of humor. It's hard to tell, but if you're trying to guess, like, is he a complete jerk or does he have a sense of humor? Well, I don't know. I could be wrong.
I'm an incomplete jerk, Nina.
Okay. That's true. You are an incomplete jerk. You are.
That's right. That's right.
You're a lost boy.
Evolving.
A Lost Boy. Oh, that reminds me of this documentary I just saw.
Oh, what was it called, Nina?
It was called The Lost Boys. I've already sent the link to several people, which is very nice because it's distributed freely. So it, all somebody needs to offer for it is their attention.
I'll tell you, though, it was, back to the film, it was a challenging film for me. All of my other films were not as challenging, and I think it's because it was a woman telling, well, I was letting the men tell their stories, but it was a woman trying to handle respectfully the stories of men. Whereas, you know, the Detransition Diaries, I'm a woman, I raised three daughters, I get girls, I had all sisters, no problem. Transmission was focused on children. We interviewed a lot of doctors. I was a pediatric critical care nurse. I got the medical stuff, jam, 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 fine. We came back from all the interviews. I had all this footage, and I went, holy hell, how am I gonna tell the story? How do I get into their brains? So the brilliant move that we had was, well, we talked to people before we went into production, people on the screen right here, and I don't know if they want to be named, but we talked to people. We did a lot of just discussions with people before we even started filming, asking questions. And then we brought on my good mate in England, Gary Powell, who works with me and our organization has for years, and he helped in the script writing. So that was a real challenge. And it wasn't until probably about a month ago when I thought, okay, we're going to be able to land this plane, and we're not going to be able to crash, and we're not going to crash. Because there was a good probably 3 or 4 weeks where I thought, I just felt like I was in the weeds. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know how I was going to pull it all together. And then we kind of came out and we went, whew, okay, I think we have the story. There have already been people that have said, the movie's not long enough. You guys know people drop off after about 20 minutes. You know, their attention span is, sure, we could have made it longer. We have 20 hours of footage that we shot. But we just knew that people aren't going to watch hour and a half long movie.
It's like 40 some minutes. And
48.
48 minutes. Yeah, that's a selling point.
My goal was under 50. And there's always those last minute like fights. No, we're not cutting that. Yes, we have to cut it. Why? Because of time. I mean, it's stupid that you make a decision of cutting good content because of runtime. But that's just the reality of the world that we live in. And people are already saying, well, why don't you take all that footage and make another movie? I'm like, that's like asking a woman who's in the middle of active labor, when are you going to have your next baby? You shut up. I'm not having any more. I'm not making any more movies.
The best people to involve in your creative process are the ones who are not there until the very end, who tell you how to do things differently.
Which is the editor often, because they're only brought in at the very end when you just hand them everything and go, here's what we have. Here's the script. Put it all together. And they go, no, no, no. How about this? How about that? You kind of go, yeah. And we did focus test early versions of it. And Artie Morty, I hope he's not going to be mad at him. He caught something that went right over all of our heads that somebody in the film said and said, he understood what the person was communicating, but it was kind of like a dog whistle for the trans activists. We were like, oh, thank you so much, because the last thing you want is to release a film and then everybody says something to you. You're like, I didn't know that. So,
oh, I'm curious. Can you tell us what it was?
Let me turn it off the camera, maybe.
Oh, man.
Oh, well, okay. How about if I tell you, but I don't say who said it?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, so there was somebody in the film that was talking about, at the end of everybody's interview, we kind of said, you know, how's your life now? What are you doing? What do you hope for? All that kind of stuff. And there was one person that said, every day that you don't transition, celebrate it. Every day that you want to do this and you don't, take it as a win and celebrate it. Hmm. And there was concern that that would be a sign of a conversion therapy.
Oh.
That we're trying to convert. And so we thought, okay, we don't want that to be a wrinkle or a rub. And that was something none of us as the writers of the script or the producer, Callie or I, that's just what ran over my head. It was recommended that that would be.
Yeah, that would have gone over my head too.
Something that we would latch onto. That's an exclusive.
We're going to exploit that as part of the...
For paid subscribers.
Well, if we... So we've just had our very first male detransitioner on Heterodorks.
Oh, do I know this person? Are they a brand new person?
Relatively new, Ray Williams.
Oh, I recently just came to know of him and his story.
We'd been following some male detransitioners, and my inclination is, no, let's let them cook a little bit longer. Let's let them cook a little bit longer, because some of them, forgive me, Isaac was was one of the very early, like very prominent, because his story was so shocking, and he had that taped interview with his therapist. Oh, should we get him on? Let's wait a little bit and see how he does. And he's not doing great.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of others. We're just like, let's wait a little bit. And
I think that's why. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that particularly for anybody who's progressed so far along this transition track, that your body's been permanently changed, that a comment like every day that you don't transition, value that. It makes sense to me, because there's a huge amount of tension in being a man who's been permanently altered to have your primary sex traits transformed, right? So it makes sense that anybody who detransitions has this sort of tension of existing in the world as a man who's been so radically surgically altered.
And even once in the Detransition Diaries and now in The Lost Boys, even though we picked solid, what I would consider solid spokespeople for their telling their story, as soon as the Detransition Diaries came out, two of the three women in that film just said, I don't want to talk to the media. Because as soon as the film comes out, the media, they don't want to talk to the filmmaker. They want to talk to the people in the film. So I'd reach out to them. And they're like, I'm done.com, moved on. They're still sort of getting through that, settling into their detransition, which is why you don't want them too young.
Right.
To sort of more settle into who am I now. But then they're also going to be in that space in a few years where they're like, okay, I don't want to be identified as this person anymore. I'm going to remove myself off of social media and take myself out of the media spotlight. And Grace in the Detransition Diaries, she took a long hiatus off of social media, and she just recently reemerged. She's had a baby. Now she's mom with a little baby. And that gives me kind of goosebumps that she's that stage in her life.
Yeah, you want to move on, but there are decisions that you make that resonate or reverberate through the rest of your life.
Yeah. Especially if they're, you know, medical complications that are going to be lifelong. And especially too, if you haven't gotten the proper care for a lot of your underlying mental health issues. If you were somebody that was struggling with depression and mental health issues, and, you know, those need to be addressed. And those can be hard to get. There's people that just battle lifelong mental health and depression and anxiety.
I've been trying to realize my life ambition of becoming an alpaca, and Nina has started to affirm me. So I think we're going to be taking steps towards human to alpaca transition. And some people say it's a mental health condition, but I feel happier.
Yeah, they're bigots. There's a lot of bigots in this world.
There's a lot of bigots.
And so you should not learn to just deal with it, Corinna. What you should do is be agitated all the time and lash out at them constantly.
I am. I'm learning how to spit at people.
I thought that was camels. Do alpacas spit too?
I'm going to be a spitting alpaca.
Okay.
They sometimes do, yeah.
Like, you have beautiful fur.
Well, when I move back from the barn into the house, I'll call you up and see if I can be a subject for your alpaca detransition project.
I don't think you're going to detransition. I think you're just going to be a disenchanted alpaca. All right. So, Jennifer, Lost Boys has been out for 3 days now, but it's social media, or it's online, so things move fast. What kind of responses have you gotten so far?
Yeah, we've been absolutely pleased. Overwhelmingly, it's been positive. There's several hundreds of comments on the YouTube channel and overwhelmingly positive. Thank you for making the film. Thank you for telling the boys' stories. Thank you, brave young men, for doing all this. There's a couple of stinkers, but I mean, what's always disappointing is the New York Times hasn't called. The Washington Post hasn't called. You know, just those big dreams. I'm still waiting for Joe Rogan or Jordan Peterson to have me on their show to talk about the film. But that's just the reality that all of us that work in the space, you know, we're just kind of ignored by a lot of these big major outlets. I kind of want Matt Walsh to say, "Hey, good film. Maybe not as good as What Is a Woman, but important film to make." It's all right.
I hope that you get that recognition. I think it's deserving.
Well, I think it's a good film. I'm pretty proud of it.
Before you started making films about gender stuff, what kind of recognition did those films get?
You may understand this, Nina, or realize that the whole film festival circuit has dramatically changed over the last decade. So with our earlier films, we entered a lot of festivals, we got into a lot of festivals, we won awards in festivals, all that kind of stuff. And that has just changed. One, it's changed because there's just a saturation of independent, low-budget filmmakers. There's so many more films that are being flooded in to film festivals. And we've also, we can't prove it, but we've also realized that probably our subject matter is not film festival worthy. Like, for example, we got Detransition Diaries into a film festival in Ohio. And we thought, well, that's great because Helena Kirshner, one of the detransition women in the film, is from Ohio. We thought, well, that's good. We even see if she'd come to the festival, blah, 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 blah. And then at the last minute, they said, we want you to pull a section out of the film so that when you show your film at the festival, they wanted us to pull Kelly J. Keene, who ends that film. And they wanted, and I said, I don't pull stuff out of my film. And so we were uninvited, disinvited. So,
Canceled.
you know,
That's
we're just
called
doing,
canceled or
is that what it's called?
deplatformed.
So it's just a much more challenging season we're in now than when the earlier days when we were producing documentary films, which were still controversial subject matters, but there was just more of a tolerance and acceptance of those kinds of more provocative films versus now, no, thou shall not host anything that's critical of trans stuff. So I say, screw them.
Yeah, and even if it's not critical, because Lost Boys isn't critical of the trans stuff. It's all it is an look at what the boys have been through.
But I even posted on X last week because we uploaded our press release to EIN Wire. I forget what one of the big news wires. And within an hour, they came back and said, your press release is against editorial guidelines. And they wouldn't run our press release. And it didn't even, it was just like a press release. Couple of like big quotes from people, you know, a little bit about the organization. Less than 700 words of a press release. And they wouldn't take it. And I nudged them back and I said, I don't understand. And then they responded back hours later and said something about the topic.
The topic being,
Five men telling their story.
yeah.
Yeah. So we scrambled. We found another place that was happy to take our money and they ran our press release. But I have never had, in all the years and the times I've ran press releases, I've never had one declined. That was weird.
Yeah. Well, I've been massively canceled by the indie film industry, massively.
I do think we're going to try to enter some film festivals for this film, especially because I do, and you guys probably see it too, I do see the climate changing. Like we might be with just what the World Health Organization did the other day, lots more people sort of becoming peaked or red pill or whatever you
Yeah.
call it. So we're going to try it. We're not going to spend a lot of money. You have to pay every time you enter a festival. And the bigger the festival is, the more expensive it is to enter. And there's no guarantee. I had an email exchange with the woman who made the Affirmation Generation film. that came out like a year ago, I think, because she entered a lot of festivals and got into quite a few and got some laurels and all that stuff. She kind of gave me some guidance and some tips. Maybe next week. Right now, it's just, the films have come out. But next week, when there's a little bit more space, then I'll probably look at a couple of festivals and enter them, see what happens. Is there any good festivals in your states? Probably.
We had the Heartland Film Festival, but I don't know how much interest there is. They've gotten documentary stuff. Honestly, I haven't attended it.
That's in Indiana, correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And my co-writer, co-producer, co-director, she's from Indiana.
Oh, really?
Born and raised in Indiana.
Yeah, I pretty much think all these festivals are captured unless they're some kind of, you know, I don't know if there's like a right-wing film festival.
Well, there's religious ones.
Yeah.
I'm sure like religious groups have festivals or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not just poo-pooing them, but I mean, I want to enter serious film festivals, real film festivals, but ones that we have a shot at. I don't want to just pay entry fees knowing that we don't even have a shot. But, you know, we're going to have a shot in states that have film festivals where they've banned the transiting of children, for example, versus I live in California. You know, I don't have a shot in hell getting in the California Independent Film Festival, or not a lot of big film festivals in the San Francisco Bay Area for like women. I always enter like women filmmaker film festivals thinking, well, I checked that box. But it's kind of a racket. And it's kind of like buying an Apple product. I hate it, but I do it. I play the racket game, but I hate playing it, but I do it.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Corinna likes racket sports.
I like Apple too.
Yeah.
See, this is why men are from Mars and women are from Venus.
Do you play pickleball?
I don't play pickleball. I'm turning 49 this year though, and I might finally be old enough to play pickleball.
I'm surrounded by people going, "You want to join our pickleball team?" No.
Yeah, I don't. I'd
rather stick needles.
I don't want to dislocate my knees leaping for something. I've dislocated my knees enough.
But yeah, so what we hope next, so what happened with our last two films is all the people around the world want it translated. So I think the transmission film and Detransition Diaries are in like 5 or 6 different languages.
Whoa, wait. This is surprising to me. I would have thought that they'd certainly subtitle them, but they want to translate them?
Well, they translate and then we subtitle.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
I was thinking they're not voiced script. Over.
Yeah, no. Okay. Actually, the Italians insist on dubbing their films because they want to hear the language. But most of our, we have a few of our films that are dubbed with, you know, the actual person who says the word.
That would be cool. An Italian dubbed Lost Boys.
Yeah.
I've been practicing my Spanish. El hombre. How do you say chopped off his penis?
The translators have got to have a tough job with the subject matter.
Well, when we're in production, we send all of the audio files to transcription services, right? Mm-hmm. So as soon as we come back from location, we have Word documents of everything that was said. And I was telling Richie the other day, oh my God, these poor translators. Because we use American translator companies here. And, you know, Richie has such a thick accent. Mm. So it was almost like we should have just translated it ourselves or used ChatGPT or AI or something to translate it. Because it was certainly not a very close or accurate translation.
So when I get my films translated, it's all done by audience volunteers. People will be like, oh, does it have this or that subtitles? And I'm like, no, but someone could make them. And then they do.
Well, and that's who does ours. It's people that volunteer.
Yeah, cool.
So we'll hear from people in Spain. We'll hear from people in France. We'll hear from, I mean, Detransition Diaries is in Hebrew.
Excellent.
You know, we're like, sure. You know?
I can volunteer. I'd like to help translate Richie into English.
Well, we've done that already, so.
Okay, good.
Oh, I thought
we should have tapped you before.
I thought you were going to offer to translate it to alpaca.
Alpaca? No, that's... I'm still learning the language.
You spit.
That means I love you.
Oh, goodness.
All right, so I want to ask more questions about The Lost Boys itself. Did you get the title from a panel at GenSpect, or did the title come from something else?
Oh, yeah, the title came from way before we were at GenSpect. Yeah. And it was just sort of a brainstorming session. You know, spitballing, trying that, testing that. Even the tagline, searching for manhood, finding manhood, struggling, you know, all those kind of words. It was just kind of a brainstorming. I think it was 2 or 3 days. It was, some of our film titles just come to us. Boom, it's like, oh, and you're like, yeah, that's it. Like, I have a film called Big Fertility. And it's like, that's it. It's Big Fertility. Others are a struggle. Brandon Showalter gets a shout out because he helped with the Detransition Diaries. He goes, about the Detransition Diaries. I'm like, that's it. It's brilliant. And it was great because it gave us the whole treatment for the film. And, you know, oh, God, I'm going to butcher her name. Reality Girl Zine. You know, on social media, she's the artist that draws all the graphic cartoons of girls with their cartoon stick figure. We reached out to her, and she did the graphic treatment for the film. So she did, like, sort of cartoon versions of Grace and Helena and Kat Callison, and different mock-ups of them, like, sitting on their bed, like they're writing in a diary, you know, why do I hate my breasts, sitting on the beach. So it gave us a nice treatment, because part of making the film is, like, what's the treatment of it? What's kind of holding it all together as a thread throughout the film? But yeah, The Lost Boys came to us. I think I was up at Lake Tahoe and I was texting a couple of ideas with one of the things that was cool about this film was a lot of the crowdfunding came from parents who have young boys, that are struggling, or have already said that they're women or whatever. And I was texting with one of these women who's been very influential in helping raise the money for this film. And we were just kind of bouncing around ideas, and we kind of solidified it then, The Lost Boys, Searching for Manhood. And we thought searching, because what do you do when you are wanting to know something? You go to the internet and you search. How do you make a movie? How do you become a filmmaker? Search on the internet. So.
Yeah,
and maybe they're not searching for manhood. What is manhood? But you know that adult thing I'm supposed to be. I love in the film when Joe Burgo says, I'm going to butcher it, but he says something to the effect of, when these teenagers are so confused and they're so caught up in their gender dysphoria, they're really ignoring the task of adolescence, and that task of adolescence of finding out who you want to be when you grow up, and what kind of work are you going to do, and how are you going to pay your bills and grow up to become an adult. So
yeah, I thought that was very relatable.
Yeah,
it's frustrating how what we call gender affirming care really takes people off course of the goal of becoming a functional adult.
Mm-hmm.
It's apparent in both males and females who transition, but how regressed we, because I'm in that group too, it's amazing how regressed we are. I didn't really reach a functional level of adulthood until we started recording about an hour ago. So I think
you
want
to be an alpaca.
Well, I do. There's nothing wrong with that. Alpacas are cute.
You want to be an adult alpaca, though, or a child?
No, I want to go through teen alpacahood.
Trans age. Alpaca age play.
Yeah. I didn't get to frolic around a meadow.
You'll have alpaca acne, then.
Alpacne.
Alpacne. That's the name of the movie. Movie, Alpacne. See, that's sometimes how the beauty, how titles just come like that. Alpacne. Oh, that's brilliant. Are you going to edit that out?
No.
No. It's probably the name of the episode.
Oh, this is too fun. The thing is, this is my job.
I don't know, this arrested development that we experience. Mm-hmm. I think it's different for girls from boys too. And I think the subtitle Searching for Manhood is really sort of intriguing to me. I haven't really set myself out to look for it in earnest yet, but yeah. Piece by piece. But when you're pretending to be something that you're not for 30 years, it's going to take you a few years to wind down from that. But
yeah,
I think when we're talking about these teenagers, because I think all the subjects were young, except Richie was in his later 20s, but everybody else was like late teens or early 20s.
Yeah, I think Richie's actually in his 30s. No,
he is, but he started transitioning
at the time. Yeah. But it's clear with all five of these young men in the film, this all started when they were young boys. Mm-hmm. You know, their confusion and their feeling like they didn't fit in. And obviously for most of them, it was when they were late teens, early 20s, when they started to medicalize.
Yeah. That's my case, too. So Searching for manhood is almost the opposite. It's almost like, how do I avoid manhood? How do I do anything except for become a man? Because these are like, it's not my tribe. Men are not my tribe. How do I avoid being thrown in with them? And I've been looking at stuff recently, just idle curiosity, but things like bullying, things like social exclusion, like some of the things that young people and adults do to drive people outside of the tribe. And if you've been driven out, if you've become a scapegoat, Nina, if you've been mistreated by your peers, then you don't have an aspiration. Some people do, but some of us don't aspire to want to get back in the tribe. We're looking for a different tribe. So it's interesting when you realize that actually being a man is not tribal, being a woman is not tribal. These are just facts of biology and how you happen to do it. These different archetypes that you might model yourself after, those might be sort of tribal if you're going to be a jock or if you're going to be, I don't know, what other kind of men are there?
There are no other alpacas. Kinds of men. There's just jocks.
There's jocks.
Sensitive artists. I mean, Alexander described himself as somebody who liked poetry and music. And,
well, that sounds like a woman to me.
and that's what they say. You're not this, you're not that. Oh, therefore you must be a woman.
That's right. That's right.
Because this is what I meant. But yeah. And I was surprised too, because it never really dawned on me. Probably because I never thought about it. But the amount of shame that young men have. And I never thought of men as having shame, because I'm a woman. Women have shame. Oh my God, I'm too fat, or I'm too ugly, or I'm too this, or I'm too that. We're more self-absorbed with our physical appearances and how our peers see us. And several of the men talk pretty poignantly about feelings of just shame. And especially when puberty hit, then it like shame doubles down. Oh, wow. I'm really despicable human being because I have all this thoughts and feelings and how much the society sort of sends these messages that you're just a filthy, dirty pervert. And what do young boys do about that?
I still get those messages from some of the gender criticals.
Yeah.
That you're a filthy pervert?
Yeah, but I clean myself, so it's not true. No, it's sort of funny because the shame messages are one of the drivers towards transition. And you can say pretty matter-of-factly, like it's like you can't even really argue against it. Shame is one of these motivators to move towards transition. And you would think that if the thing that we're really trying to do is help men get out of transition and move back towards realistic mindset about their bodies and their embodiment, that one of the things that we would consciously do is try to help people develop views about themselves that were not modeled based on shame as a primary component. Look for things that are I know the word affirmation is probably broken at this point because of how it's used as gender affirmation. But what we had tried to maybe do is actually find more genuine ways of affirming people in their biological sex.
Yeah, it's a matter of acceptance. Mm-hmm. Just accepting people. This is what you are. You have these feelings. Well, you're a man, and men at 12 and 14, they have these feelings. These are normal. And how do we channel them? How do we navigate them so that you're not masturbating on the bus on the way home to school? There's a certain way we handle these feelings that are normal and natural, and they're not bad and evil, and they don't make you a woman because you want to run from this.
Yeah,
but also, so many comorbidities, so many of these people, it's not just shame, it's bullying, it's poor Torin, he was shamed because he carried his mother's purse because he was helping his mother instead of affirming him and saying, what a nice, kind young boy helping your mother when her hands are full. Oh my God, boys don't carry purses.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We've now interviewed two different autogynephiles on Heterodorks. I mean, we also have we've interviewed autogynephiles in denial, but both Ray Alex Williams and Phil Illy acknowledge that they're autogynephiles. And Ray was saying, like, yeah, I still dress up in women's clothing at home. I do it at home. I don't think I'm a woman, and I don't do the rest of that stuff. I just do it at home sometimes. And I hate to say this, but yeah, some men's sexuality is autogynephilic, and I don't think it should be normalized in public, as performance. But I do think that men, and I kind of think everyone needs to know, like, yeah, this is a not uncommon paraphilia that doesn't mean you're a lost cause or a disgusting waste of humanity, that you can manage it and wear women's clothes at home. Like,
I'm sometimes so grateful for all those years I worked in hospitals, and I worked in university, inner city. Anybody could walk through the door any moment. We had no litmus test. We just took care of people. We didn't say, oh, you're this or you're that. You got to wait or go away. And you just treated people with respect. And I just think we need a lot more of that. I mean, I was there at GenSpec. You were there, Corinna. With that whole thing that just blew up. And I just thought, this is just really terribly unfortunate. Understanding that people have very strong opinions, but at the end of the day, I'm just going to treat people with respect. I don't have to cozy up and be best friends with everybody, but you walk in the hospital door and you've got a gunshot wound, I'm not going to say, oh, you're a man in a dress. You're going to die.
Although that has happened to some men in dresses before.
I'm sure it has, but I'm not going to say it's right.
Wait, there have been men in dresses with gunshot wounds who have been turned away from a hospital?
Yeah, there's a specific case of a pretty famous case that in Washington, D.C., I guess you wouldn't say trans woman, but this is how the case is known. Somebody who was fatally wounded in Washington, D.C., and the paramedics came and made fun of the victim instead of providing treatment, and the victim died.
When did that happen?
This was, you're familiar with the Trans Day of Remembrance, I'm sure. This was one of the cases that motivated that recognition. And so this would have been late 90s or early 2000s.
Okay, a while back.
Yeah.
Right. But we have heard in the trans community of other cases of patients not being able to get emergency or basic medical services from some providers because they weren't taken seriously because of their trans medicalization.
Well, that's legit. When I've heard trans activists claim that trans people are denied healthcare, situations like that are like, yeah, well, that's terrible. Nobody should be denied healthcare. And then as I listened more, it seemed like most of the complaints were anything other than giving hormones and surgeries on demand was denial of healthcare. So unfortunately,
we're talking about true medical need.
Yeah, I think everyone wants that. or not everyone, yeah. but I think the majority of people want that. I think the majority of people do not want surgeries and cosmetic yeah. surgeries and hormones dispensed on demand.
And honestly, there's no bottom to that kind of thinking. If you're not going to treat this person who walks into the emergency room that's a man in a dress with a gunshot wound, well, then who else are you not going to treat because they offend you in some other way? I mean, there's just...
Well, Jews, obviously. Jews. Jews are Zionists and therefore not
sure.
the fascist colonizers and shouldn't get medical treatment.
Well.
Wasn't there a doctor that said that or some person, a healthcare system?
Yeah, it's the current madness. It's the current madness. Yes. But my expectation is that in a fair and just world, that if I have an illness or a sickness, when I go into the veterinarian and I say I need help, I'm an alpaca.
Alpaca me.
I'll be speaking to the veterinarian for you because while you identify as an alpaca, I identify as a teenage girl in 4-H.
Jennifer, I have to apologize. This alpaca thing just started this week and it's just taken off.
It's contagious.
It is contagious.
Oh. Well. Yeah, so anyway, but I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. You find all kinds of people out in public doing all kinds of things. Choose to engage or not, you just get on with your day. But if they show up in an emergency room, we triage them like any other person. If they can wait, they can wait. If they're first to be seen, they're first to be seen.
Are you working on another film? I hate to ask. You're probably not working on one, but do you have any desires to make another one or any ideas you're trying to
I've said this is my last film too many times to say this is my last film. But yeah, I've said this on a couple of shows. You don't ever ask a pregnant woman in labor when she's going to have her next baby. And I feel like I've just delivered a baby by giving birth to a film. So it's right now it's just all hands on deck to push this one and try to get as many eyeballs on it and enter those film festivals. I have a book coming out next month that Callie Fallon, my co-director with the Lost Boys, The Detransition Diaries, is coming out in book format. It's a much larger book than just the three stories in the film. All that we go back to Harry Benjamin and money and the Kinsey people, the creeps, and we sort of parallel four different big moments in history where medical ethics went terribly wrong, starting with Nazi Germany and Nuremberg, and then lobotomies, and then the Tuskegee experiments on syphilis and black men, and then the forced sterilization program that was so big across the United States. And just, I think, early 2000s was the last person in California, my state, that was involuntarily sterilized.
Yeah, so they still do it in Canada.
Yeah. Well, finally in California, the one good thing that Governor Gavin Newsom has done by my scorecard is that he is paying reparations to people that were involuntarily sterilized. I think we have like a $9 million. We're a broke ass state, but we have a big $9 million reparation fund. Not that money can ever, it's like kind of like the detransfacial people that have been seriously harmed. What kind of money is enough to say, we're really sorry and we're all good now.
In California, the people who were involuntarily sterilized were mostly, I think it was entirely women who were incarcerated, right?
Yeah, it was a large percentage of incarcerated women. And the last woman in the early 2000s was a woman that had some reproductive procedure done. And oh, by the way, when they were in there doing that procedure, they cut her to fallopian tubes without her permission or knowledge. So, yeah, that's pretty gnarly. Bad medical practice, if you ask me. So the book will come out, I think it's Valentine's Day. That's how I can remember the date, February 15th. I think it's printed. They're skipping, like, all the people who blurbed it are, you know, getting their review copies and, you know, their copies thanking them for blurbing the book. So we'll probably spend a little bit of our time promoting the book when it comes out next month. Then, I don't know, then maybe I'll just take a little bit of a break. I'm going to be a grandma soon for the first time.
Congratulations.
Maybe I'll just sit in a rocking chair. You'll never ever see me again.
Well, so you're saying a break. You're not saying permanent retirement.
for people like me, I don't know you guys personally as your person. I don't see myself ever not doing something in this space because I just feel so passionate about injustice at the hands of the medical professions. So, oh, and I think I talked about this in GenSpec too. We've just submitted our manuscript to British Medical Journal. So I've co-authored a paper with Dr. Michael Laidlaw, who's an endocrinologist, and Dr. Angie Thompson, who's an OBGYN, and myself on offering fertility preservation as part of gender affirmation care. So like young prepubescent kids or post-puberty block after puberty are offered to freeze and bank their egg or sperm so that after they transition, they can maybe someday have their biological children, which is a train wreck. So that manuscript has been submitted, but it'll have to go through the peer review process and back to cancellation. Who knows if they'll accept it or kick it out or try to whittle it down to a meaningless, irrelevant paper.
In your GenSpec presentation, you said something like there are zero known cases of male fertility preservation that has resulted in a baby. I don't know how you say it.
Yeah. So it would be fertility preservation that was done in a minor,
right?
Not an adult. So a minor, and the data that we have is on minors that have some kind of an underlying cancer, for example.
Right.
So they're going to undergo chemo or radiation, which might damage the fertility. So in that population of a young man being offered to freeze and bank his sperm, there's no recorded, documented case of a live birth. And with the similar population of young girls, there's three reported cases of a live birth. And one of the young girls had to do assisted reproduction, IVF, in order twice, I believe, in order to conceive using her own frozen eggs from when she was younger. So yeah, there's not a lot of evidence in it being successful.
It's basically gaslighting young people to tell them that they can preserve their fertility because in practice, the chances that they can actually produce offspring later in life are akin to zero.
Yeah.
And as far as we know.
And you have to think about who are you going to be partnered with and what are the missing elements that you need from, like, what if you've had your uterus removed? And you're two people with no uteruses. Well, you've got frozen egg and sperm, but you need a uterus from a surrogate. Or you're two natal males, so there's no eggs in this equation. So you might have two natal males that have frozen their sperm, but you still need egg. And you still need a womb. So it's, and they're offering this to kids. Mm-hmm. Sure, doctor. Yeah. The few surveys that have been done on trans-identifying youth is overwhelmingly the girls aren't choosing this because it's quite onerous to get eggs out of a girl's body.
Yeah, it's like a giant syringe, right?
Well, it's a lot of hormones to superovulate and produce the eggs, and then they go in and then with the syringe and the needle suck them out. For boys, obviously, it's just masturbation, but then, of course, if you're gender dysphoric, and there's some people that don't want to touch their penis, they're not even thinking about having kids. They're 12 years old. They're 14. The farthest thing from most young people's minds, preserving my fertility. Well,
so you're writing, you're submitting a paper? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
A paper about this? It sounds like, sounds like it'd be a good documentary also. I don't know if you have that in mind.
Yeah, have another baby,
Jennifer. Have another baby. Come on.
Yeah, I'm past myself. I need to farm out that for everybody. I need all kinds of helpers for that one.
Do you like it? Like when I was more creative, I frequently made things because it was like somebody has to make this thing. Like this thing needs to exist. Someone has to make it. No one's making it. Okay, all right, I'll do it. Do you just wish more people were doing this so you didn't have to?
I don't know that I have that feeling. I would just feel like everybody should be doing what they should be doing. So I don't like wish you do what I think you should do. I always have those people that come up to me. I go and speak at a conference and they'll come back and they'll go, you know what you should do? And they give me some stupid ass, I don't know, I go, why don't you go do that if you think I should do it? But I'm a big believer in that people need to do, you need to play to your strengths and play to the things you care about and you're passionate about. So if there's other people that care about these things that are passionate about it, I'm like, jump right in, the water's fine, let's all do it. But I don't feel like I'm sitting around going, you should do this.
No, but I'm just like, sometimes I go, someone should do this. In fact, a lot of the time, I think someone should
do this.
You two
should collaborate on something.
You should shut up.
No, I want to see,
I'll pack me.
Jennifer, you should do a documentary about canceled artists. And Nina, you should be the star.
Yeah, you see, someone should do a documentary about canceled artists. Also, someone should have a film festival for filmmakers like you and me. Someone should really do that. I'm not going to.
Yeah,
I really want someone to do that. I don't know who, but someone.
Well, you know, I've had that conversation with, again, I always get into trouble because I haven't run by what I'm about to say by the person I'm about to say.
Don't
say
it. You just don't say their name. Just say you had a conversation with someone.
With a person who made a film in this space. I just said, you know, there's so many people like us that have made films in this space. We should just have our own film festival. But then you kind of go, oh, well, that costs money.
Right. It's work. It's work. All this stuff is work.
But it's money.
And work.
It's work. But, you know, you have to rent a theater. You have to bring the filmmakers in. You have to have a festival. You have to give prizes. You have to have judges.
See, I've been waiting for J.K. Rowling to have the canceled women's film festival. I'm like, do it, J.K.
I'm waiting for her to give me a follow. Or like one of my, just like a tweet. Throw the girl a bone.
Oh.
All right, Joe, if you're listening to this episode, please go out and like one of Jennifer Lahl's tweets. We'll put one in the show notes for you.
And then make a prestigious international film festival or film and arts festival. Invite us to it and give us prizes. Thank you.
I'd like to thank the Academy. I remember my boyfriend, the UCLA guy.
Yeah.
What was the film?
Highlander.
I remember I literally was in the ER in San Clemente, California, working in the emergency room. The little reception says, you got a call on such and such line. I pick it up. Hey, it's him. Hey, I'm going to the Academy Awards. You want to go with me? I'm like, oh, no, I don't have a thing to wear. No. He said, no. There's so many times I'm like, can I have a do-over? But I was so idealistic. I'm busy saving lives here in the emergency room. I'm busy saving lives.
No, you were.
You were. You made a good choice.
Yeah, you made the right choice.
Yeah, but you could save lives on Monday and then go to the Oscars on Tuesday.
Well, you can't save the same lives.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, gosh. So your film is on YouTube. Do you have a website?
CBC-network.org. You can read all the endorsements there. You can read the scandalous press release on the website.
Mm.
Yeah, we're really pleased with so many endorsements we got in advance. You know, not J.K. Rowling. We tried.
Yeah, you didn't ask me for an endorsement.
I didn't because I you know, I've, sometimes I feel like I ask people, and I already had that conversation with you at GenSpec. Please have me on your show. I try to like minimize my ask.
No, it's good. You dedicated the film actually to one of our previous guests, Angus Fox.
Alistair Gunn. It was dedicated to Alistair.
They're the same person?
Yeah.
What?
He was doxxed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But it was the parents that asked us to do that because he's been so helpful to them. And their, you know, their struggle with their sons. So I'm like, and I already, well, I never met him, but I knew of him and his work. So I'm like, yeah. So we asked him if we could, because, you know, I don't like to dedicate to something to somebody and then they go.
Well, I don't think he's going to listen to this episode. So I'm going to reveal something to you, Jennifer. He shared with me some of his feedback about your documentary.
Oh.
And he said that he was dealing with some feelings of, I'm paraphrasing, feelings of some guilt because he saw that he had a film dedicated to him on the same day that he took his new cat to be castrated.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Did he tell you the same thing, Nina?
He did.
Yeah, see.
He has a really cute cat. Kitten, I guess. Anyway. No. Now he's kitten.
Is that irony? Is that sad? Is that, I don't know what the word is for that.
It's the lost cat.
Sarah.
He's English, so he experiences emotions that Americans don't.
Yeah.
Like embarrassment.
Okay, so listeners, if you have not watched The Lost Boys yet, please do. It's free. It's on YouTube and elsewhere, as you have heard. It's great. Thank you, Jennifer Lal, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, TERFs and trannies.
Bye.